Well, hello, everyone. This is Chuck Gregory, the New American Dream Radio Show. Sounded like our intro didn't quite make it out there, but we're just going to proceed anyway. So, once again, the New American Dream Radio Show. And as usual, I'm going to start off with a song. Roses love sunshine, violets love dew, angels in heaven know I love you, know I love you, love, know I love you. Angels in heaven know I love you. Build me a castle 40 feet high, so I can see her as she rides by, as she rides by, love, as she rides by. So I can see her as she rides by. Write me a letter, send it by mail, send it in care of the Birmingham jail, Birmingham jail, love, Birmingham jail. Send it in care of the Birmingham jail. Down in the valley, valley so low, hang your head over, hear the wind blow, hear the wind blow, love, hear the wind blow. Hang your head over, hear the wind blow. All right, once again, this is Chuck Gregory, the New American Dream Radio Show. We're streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio, and we sure appreciate if you show them some support. Go head over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio and look for that donation button. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests: Philip Ferruccio, Frank Cordero, Anthony Rayson, and M.K. Davis. And so this Thursday evening, we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, in Port Orange, in northern Minnesota, in Chicago, Illinois, in Benton, Mississippi, in Des Moines, Iowa, and wherever you are. My recommended list for tonight: Richard Dolan on False Flags and the Alien Reality. That's the title. It's on YouTube. It's the Richard Dolan channel. Also recommending Wolfgang Halbig Revisiting Sandy Hook, also on YouTube. So again, that's Richard Dolan on False Flags and the Alien Reality, YouTube, Richard Dolan channel. Also recommending tonight Wolfgang Halbig Revisiting Sandy Hook, also on YouTube. And now for another episode of On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, The View from My Piroshki Cart. Grandma Kalashnikov writes on her website her most recent column, Fight the Power or Get Used to Your Shackles. Secrecy is the enemy of the truth. The reason so-called conspiracy theories exist is simply due to government-imposed secrecy forced by the military force and power of government on duped, unwitting citizens. End the secrecy and you will end most questions, so long as government acts honestly and truthfully and scientifically and ethically. It is dishonesty and corruption and lying and cheating by government which leads citizens to use their constitutionally protected rights under the precious First Amendment to question such lying and cheating and evidently criminal acts by government officials paid by forced taxation of taxpayers. It is lying and cheating by government which fosters all this. If government behaved honestly and openly with a conscience, there would be no need to question them most of the time. Unfortunately, your government is a pathological liar and cheater and a criminal outlaw, which belongs in a jail cell or at the end of a firing squad. Franz Jagerstatter, the White Rose, Thomas Paine, Thomas Jefferson, Paul Revere, Jim Fetzer, James Tracy, Kevin Barrett, Gordon Duff. There is a reason they exist, a reason for what they do. On Babushka, Kalashnikov's Corner, sponsored by Powder Milk Piroshki. Heavens, they're tasty and expeditious. And on the other side of the globe, we now get the view from Uncle Bill's front porch.
I'm here to condemn Obama as a war criminal and worse. The University of Illinois is giving him an Ethics in Government Award. This is a sick joke and a demented fraud. The University of Illinois, for its own typical bootlicking reasons, wants to whitewash all of Obama's international crimes. Obama should be sitting in a jail cell at The Hague with the International Criminal Court, not here getting some bogus Ethics in Government Award from the bootlickers of the University of Illinois campus bigwigs. I'm not the only one to say it. What does Professor Noam Chomsky have to say about Obama and his drone murder extermination campaign against Muslims, Arabs, Asians of color all over the world? Well, here's Professor Noam Chomsky. Particularly to the drone assassinations, the most extreme terrorist campaign of modern times, which have killed more than 5,000 people, including U.S. citizens and hundreds of children. That's Noam Chomsky, one of the great intellectuals in the world. That's how Chomsky referred to Obama's drone murder campaign, the most extreme terrorist campaign of modern times. That's amazing to think of. That's the person here that the University of Illinois is whitewashing. That figure today on his drone murder extermination campaign is up to at least 10,000. Trump's just continuing it. Indeed, Trump is just continuing across the board policies that Obama put in place. The difference between Trump and Obama and Bush Jr. is that Obama knows better. He's a magna cum laude graduate of Harvard Law School. Indeed. Obama murdered 4 U.S. citizens, at least, that we know of, including Mr. Alaki and his 16-year-old son, who was completely innocent of anything. Obama's a monster. He's a criminal. As I said, he should be in jail, not getting some bogus ethics award for the bootlickers at the University of Illinois administration. Let's review his record. First thing Obama does when he comes into office, Bush Jr. has 26,000 troops in Afghanistan. Obama escalates that immediately by 100,000 troops. 100,000 extra troops. Murdering, killing, exterminating Afghans all up and down. We don't even have a body count because the Pentagon won't give us the numbers. My estimate, maybe 1 million people. Obama's like Genghis Khan and his Mongol horde, raping, robbing, pillaging, and murdering all over the world, innocent men, women, and children. That's the guy they're giving their Ethics in Government Award to. After he's done his genocidal work in Afghanistan, Obama moves on to Libya in order to steal their oil. Obama launched his war against Libya and exterminated about 50,000 Libyans, needlessly, for no reason, except Obama wanted to steal Libya's oil. Indeed, it was outright genocide for black Africans living in Libya that Obama perpetrated upon them. Obama destroyed Libya as a state, completely. It no longer exists. We have a massive refugee crisis coming out of Libya. Thousands of Africans, blacks and Arabs, drowning in the Mediterranean. all thanks to Obama, this war criminal. After he was done with Libya, Obama moved on to Syria, destroyed Syria, worked with his jihadi terrorists to overthrow the government of Syria and create a total catastrophe. Maybe 500,000 Syrians have been murdered because of Obama, and that country is a catastrophe today. The battles still go on. We have no idea what's going to happen over there. Just like he did in Libya, Obama used jihadi extremists to wage his wars for him. And America in Libya became the Air Force for Obama's jihadi extremist. Then he turned them on Syria. There, the death and destruction by Obama goes on today. A second state that Obama pretty much destroyed all by himself with his jihadi extremists. Genghis Khan, his horde of Mongols. Now we come to Yemen, started by Obama. Massive death and destruction in Yemen right now as we speak today. Obama supported Saudi Arabia and the UAE against Yemen, has killed close to 10,000 Houthis, outright genocide, all to steal their oil and set off a humanitarian catastrophe in Yemen. Maybe 2 million Yemenis over there are suffering from cholera, the largest outbreak of cholera in the world today, and they're starving. Obama starved them to death. There's an embargo on them right now. They can't even eat. Obama started this policy. I think we could have no better indication of where Obama really stands than the eulogy he gave in honor of the war criminal and warmonger John McCain. John McCain was a war criminal. He bombed Hanoi, killing innocent civilians when he was shot down. He was outright war criminal. When he got home, McCain mongered for every war the U.S. ever waged since then, including in Syria, and supporting Obama's Nazis in Ukraine. Let us recall John McCain's theme song, Bomb, 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 Iran. 60 million people. McCain did his best to start a war against them and kill them. Obama that appeared there to give a eulogy in support of this long-standing war criminal and warmonger. Who else was there? Oh, Bush Jr., another Genghis Khan and his horde of Mongols. They're best buddies, Bush Jr. and Obama. Who else did they trot out to honor McCain? Henry Kissinger. The three of them, they all spoke right after each other. Kissinger, Bush Jr., and Obama. Kissinger of the genocidal Vietnam War, murdering 58,000 young men of my generation and exterminating 3 million Vietnamese. Here we have three major warmongers and war criminals honoring a fourth. You have Kissinger, Bush Jr., and Obama honoring McCain. Well, as I say, war birds of a feather flock together.
The View from Uncle Bill's Front Porch, sponsored this evening by Apple Pie Scented Candles.
And now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Charlottesville, and so much more. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world wails, fists clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and alleluia, while they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before, but after all is said and done, they are Americans. The construction's underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system and to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with the message, let me put it this way. While 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been, since 9/11, accomplished after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into this scandal. The president, Nutt, stood at the spot at Shanksville where the dent in the ground obviously showed that a whole airplane hit the ground right there and was swallowed up on September 11, 2001. This here dent, this uneven kind of rolly piece of hallowed ground, is now a national park, and for all time, American children will come here with their fourth grade classes and see how uneven and kind of rolly this ground is, and say God bless America and stuff like that. His voice echoed over the field where six people and 92 Secret Service agents were gathered, and a photographer from a local weekly advertiser. Cosmo, the president, Nutt, continued his speech as four of the six people began to look around because somebody said there'd be free hot dogs. "See," said the Nutt president, "there's a plane there in that hole right here in Shanksville. It went all the way into that hole, and no, there's no blood and no bodies and no luggage scattered or plane parts. And, oh, by the way, Osama bin Laden was buried at sea. God bless America, and God bless the American people, and yes, a big thank you to you, the American people." Never has so little been achieved by so many for so long. Almost total 100% apathy. "You've done almost nothing since that day, and for that we thank you. You are true Americans, and we honor you here today." Stay tuned next week for another episode of The Americans, when we will see President Cosmo Nutt of the United States of America proclaiming the National Year of Apple Pie, which will feature the continuation of the Obama program, Every Town Gets a Shooting, which was meant to be sort of like the Kennedy Declaration of going to the moon in 5 years. And where we will also see the president not being heckled by the protester group Black Farts Matter, upset because mostly all fart jokes are about white people. As President Nutt, in his new Universal Year of Apple Pie t-shirt of dollar signs, tanks, and boobs, looks out over the crowd and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of BFM t-shirts, and shouting and chanting and stuff like that.
And now a word from the Real History Channel. In Les Mis, at the very last, in the final act, they sing, "We will walk behind the plowshare and put away the sword." It's the last scene at the barricades, triumphant over the bad guys. Do you hear the people sing, "Lost in the Valley of the Night"? It is the music of a people who are climbing to the light. For the wretched of the earth, there is a flame that never dies. Even the darkest night will end and the sun will rise. They will live again in freedom in the garden of the Lord. They will walk behind the plowshare. They will put away the sword. The chain will be broken and all men will have their reward. Will you join in our crusade? Who will be strong and stand with me? That such a movie or even such lines could be said in a major motion picture in the U.S., well, there are parts of the movie that have connections to our own situation, the poor, the rich, the broad disparity, the obscene disparity. And then there are people willing to fight. And then the last big closing scene with the huge barricades, the victory, the song, all that good stuff. Well, who knows what will come of our own situation, if there ever will be a triumphant, inspiring, goose flesh, spine tingling, big closing song. Probably, maybe, the guys and gals we are fighting are a little more sophisticated than the French monarchy, but we'll do the best we can, and I guess we'll see, huh? One thing we can do is to notice. Notice the people who are doing the work these days, who are on the barricades, as they say, to catch up or keep up. Read the Nuclear Resistor online, listen to Kevin Barrett on False Flag Weekly News, Jim Fetzer, read Veterans Today. And you can also sneak the American History textbook from your daughter's backpack and rip the pages out, tear the pages up, and flush them down the toilet. then listen to an episode or two of Black Op Radio and remember your real history. Remember that the American Revolution started a long time ago. Remember that Fred Hampton and Mark Clark were on the barricades and were murdered in their beds by the Chicago police. Remember Mumia Abu-Jamal, the Omaha Two, Ed Poindexter and David Rice, Leonard Peltier, David Gilbert. There are likely many others who today are still in prison for acts committed in the last century in resistance to the military of the United States of America. And then we have the Transform Now Plowshares, three Americans who damaged United States of America nuclear weapons designed and produced in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. These weapons are made with the sweat and worry of taxpayers who work nine jobs and get up at five to take their kids to daycare and have the expressed purpose of killing millions of people. And it is the folks who are trying to stop that who have faced long sentences for sabotage. Talk about being on the barricades. This has been a word from the Real History Channel.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing, a youngin's dream of growing up to ride. On a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, no one could change my mind but Mama tried. One and only rebel child from a family meek and mild, my Mama seemed to know what lay in store. Despite all my Sunday learning, toward the bad I kept on turning, till Mama couldn't hold me anymore. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried, Mama tried. Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. Leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried. Dear old daddy, rest his soul, left my mom a heavy load. Tried so very hard to fill his shoes. Working hours without rest, wanted me to have the best. She tried to raise me right, but I refused. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried, Mama tried. Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. Leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried. Leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Frank is a former Catholic priest. He's been in prison and county jail many times fighting against the U.S. military machine. And Chuck visited with Frank earlier, and we're going to get to hear that conversation right about now.
Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank.
I was wondering when you were calling.
Yeah, I'm a little later than sometimes.
That's okay. Are we going? Are we rolling?
Yeah.
Well, we had another billboard effort, and we returned to the artists returned to the one that we had done previously. And they covered it with a national security billboard.
Okay.
So the artist went back to the national security billboard, and when it says call this number, and then they painted to shut down or close drones or shut down drones. We got a photo of it, put it out, called. Again, put it out to 80 different media people.
Yeah.
And actually called the Des Moines Register's editorial board, or not editorial desk, not uh-huh. news desk, that's right.
Okay.
And talked to the guy. He was aware of the press release, but sounded so disinterested. I said, if you're going to get it before they cover it up, you got to have a photographer out there. He says, we got that, thank you, and just hung up. So, but nothing happened. So there was like, it's the darndest thing. This billboard campaign that we're trying to start. We've had 4 altered billboards from an anonymous political artist.
Right.
With the focus on U.S. military and national security billboards. And it's a, the basic line is there's no respect for Iowa military personnel as long as the drone command center is operating
right.
to continue war crime. Just one more way in which living out here in the hitherland of Midwest good folk. White Anglo Trump land, rural Iowa, they don't want to talk about this stuff. Not even the media people care to. I mean, it's if you look at them and you're just a crass, you're doing this on purpose. Of course I'm doing it on purpose. I'm putting my
right.
name out there.
Yeah.
And it's really, in their world, the most Iowans say, well, that's just destruction of property. This man's claiming you do. Why are you letting him get away with it? They just do not deal with it because they don't want to. They just don't think it's worth the. I don't know why they're not dealing with it. I thought newspaper people covered news. I mean, the president can tweet and gets covered.
Yeah.
These political operatives can do what they want with money, with TV ads. These commercial for-profit newspapers, you know, pick and choose what they believe is important.
Mm-hmm.
It's really strange.
Mm.
Really strange. But I believe I'm not telling you anything you don't know, Chuck. What
it sounds like to me is the fix is in. You know, I mean, they have been told not to say anything about this, and they don't really dare stand up against it.
That's all these media outlets, though. I mean, really,
I know you think somebody, you know, one out of what, 80? You'd think somebody would be willing to notice and say something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's befuddling. So we continue on our multiple tracks to try to break the surface. We came back from the Sugar Creek retreat, which was close to 100 folks and 25 houses represented, something like that. The Des Moines Catholic Worker got the right to do the Faith and Resistance retreat this spring.
Oh,
and we're going to focus on the drone command. It's not for sure, but it's like 90% sure. I'll follow through on this. That we're going to do it on the weekend of St. Patrick's, March 15th to the 17th.
Uh-huh.
And we did this in 2014.
Uh-huh.
Same retreat, same crowd, same issue, except the drone command was not open. It was the year before it opened, and we were protesting it.
Uh-huh.
So the workers are returning now after 3 years. Should be a good demo. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, that sounds good. So how,
one of the things we'll teach folks about St. Patrick was that he was a pacifist, was against all war.
Yeah. Okay.
How about that?
How about
for those
that?
Irish
Indeed.
Folks? Hey.
Very good.
He wasn't a teetotaler, but he was a pacifist.
Well, for an Irishman to be a teetotaler, that wouldn't sound
well,
right at all.
Well, we'd call that almost like a Protestant, but you know what do I know? So that's going on, and the it looks like we've got Jess and Ruby are going to hang on until Julie gets back, and they're taking over the Rachel Corey house. Going to have that for 6 months for. Some healing space, which is great. I'm glad we can afford it for these three women.
I thought they were taking over the Berrigan house, and you moved.
They negotiated the Rachel Corey house with Julie.
Oh, I see.
I'm staying here, and then I have a couple, Jacob and his partner, Rainey, are moving over to my place over there. They're going to be great caretakers of the library, and they're social activists, too. So there's no problem with the continuity of purpose. And I'm going to be living over here at our Dingman House above the hospitality floor.
Yeah.
And it's a good place. What it does for me is it gets me all the stuff I need in one room.
Uh-huh.
I have to go through all of my 40 years of archivical stuff and get it out of Berrigan House and send it to Marquette, where they're archiving the Des Moines Catholic Worker. I finally got to get rid of all that stuff, move it out of the house. So I can be personally free of it, and not have people younger than me who don't understand it be responsible for stuff they really shouldn't need to be.
Sure.
So I'm going through that, and I'm in the process. I know I'm downsizing a lot of stuff.
Hmm.
So it's a good discipline, but right now I'm in the middle of it, and it's going to take a few weeks to get this done. So
I'm
got that, plus, you know, it's got a full plate of things to do.
It sure sounds like
this,
it.
We've got the Occupy thing coming up pretty quick here in October. We've got the we've got to put out our newsletter. This year we're going to put out 3 instead of 4. We just have to be realistic about what we can do, and try to put out the best thing we can. So that's what's going on. And we're going through always communal upheaval. There's one consistent thing you'll hear from Frank through the years is community is a bitch. It's hard. It ain't easy. It's like marriage. And we're not very self-select. Community, and in this country, the sacrament of marriage is a 50-50 chance. So, you know, you know, a culture that does that has got to have problems. And we do. I just know that this is the doorway to, first of all, crucifixion, and then secondly, salvation. Mm. That's my opinion. I'm putting it out there, and I don't have great expectations, just that folks don't kill each other in the process of doing the works of mercy. You would think that'd be no problem, but I'm telling you, really, it's we ain't healthy people. So it's okay. It's in that sense, I'm very Catholic. I don't have any qualms or illusions about humans and the culture we live in. But I do know that we can hit the mark. We can keep feeding people. We can keep trying to treat each other respectfully and break down our human organization so that those of us who are born with such privilege can limit the damage we can do. And do works of mercy that are like, they're redemptive. All the Holy Scriptures, the Christians, the Eastern European, not Eastern European, but Eastern religions of China and India, all of them have the highest regard for the works of mercy and the obligation to meet the needs of those who are the least. And that's you know, that's kind of a universal holy thing. And that ain't bad. That's a good life.
Indeed.
I'm standing by it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you, Frank.
All right, brother.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
All right.
We have again received word from Randall from Stevens Point.
I got my gun in my truck. Told you I'm heading for the woods, been up the mountain to where I am now. Right now, I can see y'all from right here through my scope. Don't worry, I got safety on. Well, it's on now. Tell Bubba Jean I always loved her. Don't follow me. Got on my camo jeans, you'd never find me. And you hear about the big shootout, all that, well, that'll be me. Randall from Stevens Point is now underground in America. Before he gets started, he wanted us to again relay the message. At first, I got something to say to my relatives in Baraboo. Really not talking to any of you, because you know why. Randall's note continues. Deceit spurts from war like blood spurts from a knife. First casualty of war is a simple truth. People more afraid to tell the truth in wartime because killing going on. People are afraid of sudden death. It's the emotional basis of the endless war on terrorism, which is an ideological fraud from beginning to end. Al Gore allowed the election to be stolen from him. People can be afraid to object, but they should be more afraid to lay down their lives and their children's lives in service to lies. Ridiculous. consider the fact that RFK specifically tore Thane Eugene Caesar's necktie off before he expired, yet the utter fabrication that Sirhan Bishara Sirhan had anything whatsoever to do with his murder besides playing the role of a distraction can't be reconciled. I would say it's all about control. But maintaining the illusion of democracy, not out of fear of the population, it's out of expediency. Poppy Bush once spoke of the end of history as a noble goal. Some of his son's operatives, in their unintended truthfulness, spoke of creating realities. Much easier to control opinion in a reality of one's own making. These specialists have melded psychology, marketing, and communications into a suffocating brew. Indeed, the real idea of the CIA was not foreign intelligence gathering. It was a shadow government operation with cover to facilitate the wishes of the elite. The public government is a stage play. It's a distraction. The news functions as a sporting event, designed to engage the audience in the competition between two imaginary forces and the reaction to manufactured events. I think all that is beyond question. Real question is, what is one to do about it? Like a magician's trick, once the methods are exposed, it's impossible to duplicate the effect. Awareness is the key.
Our next guest of the show is Anthony Rayson. Anthony Rayson joins us each month from Chicago. Anthony is a former toll booth operator on the Chicago freeways. He's a zine publisher. He publishes the writings of prisoners, mostly. Communicates with prisoners over the years. They write back to him. He publishes them, sends them to us, and sends them back into the prisons. And now we get to hear from Anthony Rayson in Chicago.
We're just going to pull that up right away. Hang on.
Hello.
Well, hello, Anthony. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Very good. Well, there's a big trial going on in Chicago featuring the defendant, the Dick Van Dyke, who pumped 16 bullets into a young black man named Laquan McDonald. Now, recently, there was another trial that ended, whereas a cop was called on a domestic dispute. He killed the kid and the neighbor lady next door. The jury awarded one of the families $2.5 million, but the judge reduced it to $1. So I'm going to read a piece I wrote about the police back when Bush was president, but it's still very applicable today. It's entitled, "The Police Are Trained Killers." People are incredibly naive here in America. Many believe this horrible war in Iraq is a hideous aberration of American values of freedom, peace, justice, benevolence, etc. This is not true. America has always been fiercely aggressive and murderous towards people throughout the four corners of the globe, from the South and Central America to Southeast Asia, the Middle East, Africa, Asia, even North America, Europe. The U.S. military has repeatedly unleashed ghastly carnage on the people and ecology, as well as trained and propped up the most monstrous, murderous proxy governments, their death squad police and militaries. No evil nor gruesome torture is off the tables to these sadists. Murder means nothing to them. It's routine. It's their job. So now, where do you think they get the people to run the police and the prison apparatus in this country? Well, there's a lot of corruption and nepotism and clout-type favoritism. Some people love to wield authority over others. Some enjoy causing pain, and some are racist who see these jobs is a chance to deal with those they hate. Some are imbued with idealism, patriotism, and even want to help humanity in pursuit of police career, inculcated with the official propaganda that this is the career where their hopes and dreams of service can be best realized. After all, the culture is a ubiquitous police glorying one. But a very important piece of their resume, which is almost mandatory, is military service. First, you must become a trained killer for the U.S. or state government, National Guard. These distinctions are blurred as the U.S. imperialist juggernaut is regularly sending guardsmen and women overseas to their theaters of operations, lately Iraq and Afghanistan. So if you're lucky enough to survive your tours and come home to look for work, you've been conditioned into accepting and participating in the most sinister of organized criminality, breaking into people's homes, kidnapping men, shooting, killing, torturing, intimidating people. In short, you become nazified. The most heinous activities you come to see as normal, necessary, routine, even good. These are the types of people that the increasingly militarized police forces in the U.S. are looking for. Many people recoil at this horrible development. They oppose killing and war for American business profit and monopoly of the world's resources. Clarity of this humanist perspective is very loudly on the American psyche, as people are subjected to relentless brainwash and lies, which people are so bombarded with here. Insanely, many equate brutal American militarism and the slaughters that they are forever involved in with freedom. Those who do see clearly and have the courage to speak out about it are looked upon as enemies, even if they are Americans themselves. Anyone who's been to an anti-war demonstration in Chicago or anywhere else in the U.S. is confronted by hundreds, even thousands of Darth Vader Ninja Turtle cops who are armed to the teeth, along with infiltrators, helicopters, dogs, horses, paddy wagons, surveillance cameras, etc., etc. Clearly, people who desire peace are the enemy of the government. How dare we not want endless worldwide U.S.-caused bloodshed that we pay our taxes to fund? Those menacing us behind their shields and masks were called and recruited by the government from our families and neighborhoods to do this sordid work. They are the bedrock formation that the government needs to, so their killing and domination continues without serious interruption. These cops were once our children who can and are turned into monsters at the bark of an order from their immediate superior in rank. Such is the level of depravity our society has been manipulated into. People don't know what they need to know. Their education has been quite counterproductive. They've learned not to go there, meaning not to develop a real understanding of social, political, or economic conditions. Did not develop the thinking, inquiring, active mind, focusing on humanism and developing society, but have degenerated into being, frankly, mindless consumers who concern themselves with their nuclear family, their pet addictions, and how to avoid having to think about societal reality. They stick with their sports, their cosmetics, their drugs of choice. They've been cowed and bludgeoned into sorry submissiveness. It's a vacuous, ignorant culture where money means everything, and even a repressed black community mirrors the murderousness of their oppressors, as well as their longing for ostentation, oblivious to the assembly line prison these mimicking behaviors are funneling them into. For this demented society, we are supposed to cough up our children so other countries can learn democracy. Even with super advanced military technology, compared with our enemies, it can be damn dangerous, especially if you're a low-ranking soldier of 18, 19, or 20 sent out on patrol. Even though the kill ratio is something like 100 to 1, U.S. soldiers do get killed in Iraq. Many, many more are seriously injured, and even more still have delayed disabilities due to post-traumatic stress syndrome and the aftereffects of depleted uranium and other poisons they've been subjected to. This doesn't even really factor in the psychological nightmare of being brutalized into being a soldier and forced to witness and participate in evil activities. So when they come home, they don't fit in the nice, artificial consumerist sitcom world they left. Jobs, as always, are scarce, and besides, who's going to want to hire a guy who's gone through this Dante's Inferno? Well, the state might hire you, a prison might hire you, and the police always need guys used to this sort of order obeying without qualms training. Bush rose to the presidency as a Texas serial killer. While Hitler's election was cleaner than W's, he's now a world-class genocidal criminal, as is Cheney and the others, calling the deadly shots. So international criminals determine who our enemies are and what criminal behavior is, anything that opposes their megalomania. The police follow guidelines erected to totally corrupt legislative and judicial systems. So the cops are awash in a sea of criminality. They've come from the military and have seen and participated in murders and all forms of mayhem without hardly any serious accountability. We've seen wedding parties bombed, even friendly fire incidents, mass killings of insurgents and civilians all mean nothing except maybe an absolving perfunctory report. This is their training on how to write reports once they're back in the States as cops. Plus, like heroin, the military doesn't like to let go of their people, and often forces them back into active duty in the military, and they find themselves shouldering a much more lethal gun in a neighborhood in a foreign country. Also, there's the Soldier of Fortune, mercenaries or private contractor, security forces, corporate-run for-profit armies, layers of domestic security forces, etc., which the police can and do also access. Cops also see the sordid underbelly of corporate crime, wage slavery, illegal aliens, and a wild assortment of profit maximization schemes, unsafe working conditions, bank fraud, mass layoffs, the blackmail corporate lawyers use to extort concessions from grateful and bribe-taking local officials, drunken corrupt politicians, prosecutors and judges, as well as the ugly manifestations of street crime, prostitution, sexual slavery, drug addiction, killings, robberies, etc., etc. So they're operating in a sea of crime and are all left to sort it out under the strange restrictions of the law. They must hold their noses and follow the guidelines set by the big corporate criminals and the political flunkies. All those who are connected get a free pass. So they're left to make a living, engaging in criminal activity themselves, arresting, confiscating, breaking and entering, assaulting, kidnapping, framing, etc. Those underneath them that the system calls fair game, mainly poor people of color usually as well, had engaged in the American pastime of criminal behavior in some mostly minor form or other. Those they arrest and charge are served up to the for-profit legal lynching system and incarceration human warehousing industry. These two, of course, are wildly corrupt rip-off system of racialist criminality raised to unctuous levels of pomposity and arrogance mixed with vicious cruelty, endless graft, and human misery. Police regularly must go into these ornate buildings of a meticulously scripted judicial railroading court and perform their same old role, testifying to grease the whole game. They know the judges, prosecutors, and lawyers are low-life scum, but they're there to continue tracking young blacks and others into adult prison. They know there's no accountability in all this, and they feel that they should be granted blanket immunity, too. After all, they got to deal with criminals from every direction, try to sort out the whole mess out all the time, have to be out on the streets, putting the lives on the line, deal with accidents, crowd control, crime, etc. This is all done for a sort of minimum wage as far as the chosen are concerned. They do better than most wage slaves. They have decent medical benefits and pensions, etc. But they don't make anywhere near what the jackass lawyers and politicians make, not to mention the bastards in the boardrooms. So the way the cops see it, they'll be damned if they're going to go over to bumfuck Egypt get their ass shot out so Halliburton can have a record profit per quarter, then come home, go through all this training bullshit, take tests to become a cop, deal with all these crooks back here every day,
hey, everyone,
do all this fucking paperwork and proper procedure, and yet still be subjected to the laws of the land like Joe Schmo citizen. Nope, it ain't going to happen. We're going to take the same immunity as the pipsqueak jagoffs who get elected. Nuh-uh, that's part of the deal. So who's going to call the cops to account when they commit egregious crimes?
We're past the time they're going to start playing the ad. So thank you very much.
Okay.
I've been trying to find a time to stop you, but it was so good I couldn't do it.
This is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda.
All right, bye-bye.
Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exo Politics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steiner will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the evening is Philip Ferruggio. Philip joins us each week from Port Orange, Florida. He is an activist who writes for a large number of sites, including World News Trust and many others. And he joins us each week with, "It's the Empire, stupid."
All right. Good evening, working stiffs. Where's the rest of our country? You know, the 1942 epic film, King's Row, actor Ronald Reagan, of all people, played a down-and-out working stiff, Drake McHugh, who just had his legs amputated due to an accident. He was under anesthesia and did not know this. Thus, when he came to, he uttered that famous line, "Where's the rest of me?" It's a very appropriate query for all of us working stiffs as to the nature of this current economic state of affairs. For decades, this military-industrial empire has been whittling away at our safety net from all sides. Funding for so many necessary services has been continually cut to the bone, while the empire keeps funding that militarism beast to the tune of over half of our federal tax revenue. No one, or rather so few, seem to care. At least Drake McHugh's friends did when he screamed that famous scream. We have a two-party, one-party system that equally kneels at the altar of empire. Wall Street, big banking, and the Pentagon call for more war-related instruments of destruction and invasion. Meanwhile, the Republican versus Democrat political scam will have many food fights over many issues, but never about the ones which could actually help pull back this empire. Yet when it comes to saluting the flag and honoring our, quote, brave warriors, these two parties cannot give enough in the way of accolades. Well, the flag is my flag, too. As far as our, quote, brave warriors, well, our military personnel should never have been sent to any of those places in that hornet's nest called the Middle East. What many other nations realize, even our empire's allies, is that our illegal and immoral invasions and occupations have given rise to insurgencies, terrorists throughout the Middle East. Plus, and most important, is that the entire refugee crisis throughout Europe was instigated by Washington's schemes to reprint the map of that region. While performing these non-heroic deeds, our taxpayers are footing the bill. To keep one soldier in Afghanistan, it costs you and me, taxpayer, at least $1 million a year. Think how many more first providers we could hire for that money. Think of how many teachers, library books, infrastructure repairs that one soldier's pay could finance. Multiply that by thousands of such military personnel, and then add the cost of all those WMDs. One Apache helicopter costs $55 million, just one. And you can see how insane we are as a culture. Does anyone care? The empire narcotizes us with sports and electronic gadgets up the kazoo. Of course, as the 18th anniversary of 9/11 is upon us, they make sure we see lots of camouflage-wearing military personnel all over. They stand at the openings of the football stadiums as the players enter the field. They have the honor guard to bring out the flag and prepare for the anthem. Then everyone, sadly, even most of the black NFL players, cross their hearts and solemnly honor this empire. Why? Well, citizens of the Fifth Reich, we are at war. Maybe we need Groucho Marx to come out and lead the hoopla. Thank you.
And it's that time of year again. Time for us to find out who is the dumbest dumb guy in America. The absolute biggest pile of crap who salutes the fighter jets flying at treetop level over his house while struggling to pay his own Budweiser, bacon, and bananas bill. Who will get the prize? I'm proud to be a Nazi bumper sticker presented by Gene Rosen and H. Wayne Carver at midfield during halftime of the Super Bowl game. Nominate your next door neighbor, your nephew, or your brother, your mom and dad by just contacting your local Moose Lodge. And now we return to the adventures of Mark. In his parents' basement, covered in Cheetos dust, the most dangerous blogger on the planet, Earth. It is possible to create an incident without which will demonstrate convincingly that a Cuban aircraft has attacked and shot down a chartered civil airliner en route from the United States to Jamaica, Guatemala, Panama, or Venezuela. The passengers could be a group of college students off on a holiday or any grouping of persons with a common interest to support chartering a non-scheduled flight. We could sink a boatload of Cubans en route to Florida, real or simulated. We could foster attempts on lives of Cuban refugees in the United States, even to the extent of wounding in instances to be widely publicized. A Remember the Main incident could be arranged in several forms. We could blow up a U.S. ship in Guantanamo Bay and blame Cuba. Use of MiG-type aircraft by U.S. pilots could provide additional provocation, harassment of civil air, attacks on service shipping, and destruction of U.S. military drone aircraft by MiG-type planes would be useful as complementary actions. An F-86 properly painted would convince air passengers that they saw a Cuban MiG, especially if the pilot of the transport were to announce such fact. The primary drawback to this suggestion appears to be the security risk inherent in obtaining or modifying an aircraft. However, reasonable copies of the MiG could be produced from U.S. resources in about 3 months. At the end of the day, remember that this day was brought to you by Operation Northwoods Spray Deodorant. With Operation Northwoods, the fog hangs in the air long after you've gone. Back a few decades ago, some people in government planned to carry out murders and crash airplanes and have fake news reports to fool the American people into invading Cuba. It didn't happen only because John F. Kennedy, a real president, was in office. But then the ones who liked the idea of Operation Northwoods killed Kennedy, and now we have fake everything. Fake presidents, fake news, and fake wars. Well, the killing and dying, some of it, are real. It's just that everything else is baloney. Operation Northwoods, it hangs in the air. Our next guest of the show is M.K. Davis. We're a little bit early, and we've been having a little bit of trouble contacting M.K. before the show, so we're not sure if we'll be able to contact him, but we're going to try. It's M.K. Davis from Benton, Mississippi.
He's a Bigfoot expert. I think last time he talked about the Zapruder film. But we're going to see if we can contact M.K. Davis in Benton, Mississippi, and see what he'd like to talk about tonight.
Hello.
Well, hello, M.K. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
All right. You know, I was kind of iffy whether I was going to be through with what I was doing, but I'm in the big city of Los Angeles right now. I came over here to do a television show. It's going to be out later on. I don't know exactly when, but it's about monsters and mysteries on the Travel Channel. So you kind of look forward to it. You know, when I'm sitting down there shooting the show and mulling over things, and I thought about how, you know, this is such a subject that you know, there's a lot of skepticism out there, and deservedly so, for a lot of things. But what I wasn't talking or thinking about the regular skeptical mind that most people have. I was thinking of something that's been a few years developing now, where they have professional skeptics, and they sort of ignore a lot of good evidence, and they make it where a person feels afraid to be right. You know, it's okay to be wrong, but they make a person afraid to be right. And so, you know, I wondered what's the difference between someone who believes nothing and someone who believes everything, whom they criticize? Well, it's really not any difference. Skepticism is a method that's prevents people from falling for, you know, hoaxers or falling for scam artists, you know, that type of thing. But what if it's not a scam? You know, what if it's not a hoax? Then it serves a totally different function. It prevents people from understanding their world. And someone makes a discovery, like Patterson did and Gimlin, and by virtue of skepticism, 50 plus years later, it's still right where it was when it started. And you have to say that is unhealthy skepticism. It is very unhealthy. It's okay to be wrong. It's even okay to be taken in, but what you don't want to have done is someone actually making a discovery and then not accepting it, or making it where it can't be accepted. So the paid skeptic, the professional skeptic, says no to everything. And so he's no better than a person who believes everything without proof. So they're on the same level. And what I'm saying is that after 20 plus years, and working with the Patterson film to get to those really good images from the original, and then putting it together in a highly stable form where you could actually look at it and see living tissue. You could see things moving as biomechanically correct things should. And then it's treated no better than the worst blurry picture there is out there. And then you see the last survivor, Bob Gimlin, going from conference to conference, making his case to relatively small groups of people, when it should have changed the world of anthropology or even zoology, depending on the nature of it. That film should have gotten us way beyond "does it exist, It's way too good for that. It's too good. It's good enough to say it exists and then argue over the nature of it. The conversation should be about the nature of what's on the film, not whether it's real or not, whether the film's real. It has reached a point where, you know, it doesn't need, it needs an advocate. It needs someone to speak up for it and say, no, enough's enough. You know, if you don't have evidence at least as good as the film in order to counter it, then why are you having equal time? You know, it's the paid skeptic, when they come against this film, and I'm not talking about all the other blurry stuff out there and shaky stuff that you can't tell nothing about, but I'm talking about the Patterson film in its present form after I have worked on it for 25 years and I know what it is, then you got to have something at least that good to counter it. And if you don't have it, you know, the back door is this way. You know, an advocate is what the film needs. It needs people to say no to no. And we can't have the wonderful world that the world is if we don't acknowledge it, if we can't understand it, if there is nothing that's acceptable, that's not in the bubble. So, if this makes people uncomfortable, then that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. You know, we have a comfort zone, but we can live outside of it. You know, and we can have new normals. You know, and the next normal might include Sasquatch or Bigfoot, as pictured in that film. And subsequent films yet to come in the future. So we want other films, but until then, we have this film, and this film is good enough. And I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, at some point in time, you gotta tell these people, no, you don't get equal time, you know. It's not good enough to say Roger Patterson had bad credit. That's not going to counter what's on that film. And it's not good enough to say that Roger Patterson was sick with cancer and he needed a lump sum of money and some kind of money shot. But it's not, that won't counter what's on the film. So if you can't counter what's on the film, then shutting up would be a nice thing. You know, we don't need a bobblehead doll that's constantly rocking its head and saying no. So that's kind of where my thoughts went today as I was trying to make a case for the Patterson film. And you only have a limited time. They'll let you say a few things, but they have a full show with a full slate, several guests, and you know, so you're limited on what you can do about it, you know, in that venue. But it made me think, and so that's kind of where I'm going at today on my little diatribe for today. Viva the Patterson film. How am I doing on my time?
Well, you've got another 6 or 7 minutes, MK.
Okay. Well, that's because I'm cruising.
All right.
I'd like to encourage people to go to my blog site. I got some new stuff up there on the blog site from the Patterson film. And the new processing procedure that I've used, I've also applied it to some other films that were also shot at slow frame rates, and it's worked marvelously. You'll see at the davisreport.wordpress.com, Click on the film banner up there. It'll take you to the latest stuff. You'll see Ishii. Ishii, the last Indian or Native American to have European contact with whites in 1911. He came out of the woods. He could not speak any language that was known. So Ishii, in the 3 years that he lived past there, they had film of him shooting his handmade bow, and the film canister caught fire chemically from poor storage. And there was only a few frames left, you know, that were good. And I took those frames and used that new procedure to bridge, even though he skipped a lot of frames between them, I was able to bridge it or to, it's really not fair to call it a lace. It's called a transition. In other words, I had 10 transition frames between each one of the originals. And when you see the end result, it's wonderful. I mean, you can see him, you know, pull the string back. He held the bow in this unique way with his thumb. And that was, the Mongolians did that. Nobody in America did. So that's still unexplained. But I was able to get all of that in that and bring it out in that film. And it's very, very rewarding. I'm so proud of that. And then I have the Mayaka skunk ape photo. There was only two photos. And the lady took them like, bam, bam, one after the other. And then she described it having picked itself up and looked at her. And I put those same transition frames. I built those out of those two pictures. And you essentially have a little video of the Mayaka skunk ape raising up just exactly like that lady said. So I know that it's not a static set, that it is a moving, something that moves. So you learn, it's a tremendously resourceful and enlightening method for anything taken at very slow frame rates. I'm just enormously proud of it, and I think that it contributes mightily to understanding or vetting certain kinds of evidence and putting it in a real good form where you can see it. You can run the Patterson film at its proper rate. Before, if you ran it at the proper rate, it would flicker so bad you couldn't tell. You know, it would be very, very distracting. Now it can be run in a slow motion, and it's just steady and smooth. And so I'm just really proud of that. I also did a clip of the Kennedy assassination film that was a Bruder film, and it was improved tremendously. So go to the davisreport.wordpress.com and see what I'm talking about. Click on the banner up there and just scroll down to it. You'll see all of that below. I am
okay. In the 3 or so minutes we got left, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about what you're doing in L.A. I mean, this sounds like a pretty big thing that you're filming. Have you done it before?
Oh, I have. I have done it before. As a matter of fact, this is the third time I've done it for the Travel Channel. A different company's doing it though. They're based out here in L.A. I've shot a show with them about Death Valley, okay. and I shot a show with them this past June about the legends of Louisiana, particularly the Honey Island Swamp Monster.
Hmm.
And so this is my third one and second one this year, and this is about Bigfoot in general. The subject matter of monsters and mysteries, and they asked a lot of questions. It was an interview style thing, and they asked a lot of questions. Some of them, you know, when you're asked questions, you know, it forces you to think yourself and to give a good reply. So I got to thinking about the part about skepticism and has it been a service or a boon, or has it been a bane? I'll have to say, regarding that film, the Patterson film, in the case of it's been a bane. It served no purpose at all, because what they're shaking their head no to is an extremely good film. You know, that shows a lot of living, you know, biomechanics and tissues and hair, and you know, it's too good to just blow away like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm on this subject today. I didn't have a lot of time to prepare. I was wondering if I was even going to be on here.
You did have time, and it was it was great. You know, you don't have to worry about that. It came out great. I'm real glad to hear that you have this opportunity on the Travel Channel, and I hope there'll be lots more.
You know, I hope so too. You know, I think those kinds of things are good opportunities and platforms to talk about. Those subjects, you know, they didn't used to be addressed at all.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that. And if it goes over good, maybe I'll get some more opportunities, but you know, you always want to try to do good with those opportunities. And I hope that my interview, you know, you never know how it's going to end up on the cutting floor, but you hope that you accomplish what you set out to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, thanks again. You know, we always appreciate having you on the show each month, and we'll look forward to it next time.
Okay. I saw another interesting person there they were interviewing, and this man was a six-foot artist. so you meet people too in those kind of pursuits.
Yeah. Okay. All right, we're really out of time, but
thanks. All right. Bye-bye. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles, a show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now a message in the Boone's Farm Bottle. Notes we have received from listeners during the first half of our show by email, chat room, telephone, telegraph, and telepathy.
From Mark Felt, we get this. The plan is for the United States to rule the world. The overt theme is unilateralism, but it is ultimately a story of domination. It calls for the United States to maintain its overwhelming military superiority and prevent new rivals from rising up to challenge it on the world stage. It calls for dominion over friends and enemies alike. It is not that the United States must be more powerful or most powerful, but that it must be absolutely powerful. It was only after September 11 that the plan emerged in full. Within days of the attacks, Wolfowitz and Libby began calling for unilateral military action against Iraq on the shaky premise that Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda network could not have pulled off the assaults without Saddam Hussein's assistance. At the time, Bush rejected such appeals, but Wolfowitz kept pushing. The president soon came around. In his State of the Union address in January, Bush labeled Iraq, Iran, and North Korea as an axis of evil, warned that he would not wait on events to prevent them from using weapons of mass destruction against the United States. He reiterated his commitment to preemption in his West Point speech in June. If we wait for threats to fully materialize, we will have waited too long, he said. We must take the battle to the enemy, disrupt his plans, and confront the worst threats before they emerge. Although it was less noted, Bush in that same speech also reintroduced the plan's central theme. He declared that the United States would prevent the emergence of a rival power by maintaining military strengths beyond the challenge. With that, the president effectively adopted a strategy his father's administration had developed 10 years earlier, to ensure that the United States would remain the world's preeminent power. While the headlines screamed preemption, no one noticed the declaration of the dominant strategy. A message in a Boone's Farm Bottle. Notes we have received from listeners during the first half of our show by email, chat room, telephone, telegraph, and telepathy. Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. September 11, 2001 happened everywhere, even in Moon Rock Lake. What I heard was, well, there was this guy on his way home from a conference. He was at an airport, a big city. He fell asleep in one of those tiny little cramped chairs. Just imagine. Boom. Boom, boom. In his sleep, John saw flashes and explosions. And home movies of blowing on birthday candles and then more rapid-fire bursts and sitting in shop class in his underwear and burned stiff bodies. All the components of an American dream. Too many bodies. The bodies were stacking up in the shop area of Mr. Shoemaker's class. Next to the cross-cut saw, the band saw, radio arm saw, and the circular saw. Each year on the first day of class, Mr. Shoemaker would name the saws by firing out the fingers of one hand. The band saw, radio arm saw being half and three-quarters length because of an ancient band saw accident, or perhaps separate accidents. Outside the class door, John smelled the lunchroom and a whiff of Sue McCarthy's perfume. He heard the rumble of the changing classes. He saw Susan sitting in the next row, and since this was a dream, he smiled wide and reached over to pull her hand to his crotch. John's hand hit something before reaching Susan. He opened his eyes, saw his own fingertips touching a knee, wearing dark blue pants. Some sort of tweed? What TF is tweed? John uncrossed his legs and sat up in the tight little blue airport seat. Blood rushed through his body, filling his face and ears. He looked up and saw three people looking down on him, shoulder to shoulder, all wearing varieties of dark and white, as if three stern Catholic playground monitors had showed up to haul him to time out. "Are you a terrorist?" said the white-haired man in the middle. "Oh, what happened to what? It was Folgers in your cup." He was tall and successful-looking, the same as the younger ones. The black-haired man on the right, the blonde babe on the left. The young man flipped open a wallet with an FBI identification. Yeah, it probably came with a cheap billfold. John couldn't believe his eyes. They were really here. Like finally having an alien sighting. All stern and serious and dark and white. John sat next to his bag in the waiting area to board his flight at Kennedy for home after attending the 9/11 truce anniversary events. He wore a black and white Investigate 9/11 t-shirt with letters and numbers in the shape of the smoking Twin Towers. He styled fairly new jeans, very new white tennis shoes. The woman agent held in her hand a green flyer that John recognized from the conference. She pulled it to her waist, gripped it by the edges with her fingertips, held the front towards John. He nodded. He knew his name was there as a speaker. The younger man bent down, squinted to read the button on John's shirt. The older man put his hand on his waist, pulling back his coat to reveal a black pistol. Smooth move. John still had not spoken. He consciously noted he had heard their voices. They had not heard mine, not that I knew of, and so I thought that gave me a semblance of control. "Sir," said the woman in a deep, beautiful, tough woman voice that was not unnatural. Her hair was coarse from too much swimming. Well, too much, that's not my judgment to make. Maybe it was just right for her. Nice tits. Very, very nice. She stepped in, took me by my underarm in a grip that was just a small change in pressure points would have brought me to my knees. Well, so would the tits. Black-haired boy shook his mane back the way cool kids do and leaned to pick up my bag. "What have I done?" I said, as I rose to stand, trying to sound uninhibited, not perturbed, non-indignant, unafraid, honest, truthful, trustworthy, brave. Chief white-haired guy stepped right in. I smelled the cherry lifesaver in his cheek. His eyebrows were white and bushy and his face worn. In his killer cool brown eyes, I saw all the way to Quantico and Fred Hampton and Wounded Knee and Dillinger. Too many whiskeys after golf. Four successful kids. A retirement lake home. "John," he said. The voice underlined all my assumptions. "Cannot make this stuff up. These guys, when you actually meet them, they walk fully dressed, right out of your midnight imagination." "John." The four of us formed a huddle, surrounded by the eyes and ears now beginning to focus on us. Again, he showed me the gun, the persuader, a subtle aside. "We need to visit with you," said the voice of Marshal Dillon. He took me by the other arm. We fell in behind Blackie, carrying my grayish-blue bag, uniquely designed for two purposes in life, same as old blonde's ass, to look good and fit into a tight space. Whitey and blonde had me securely by the arms. Blackie never got too far ahead. We attracted plenty of stares, gawks, leers. Scenarios developed instantly by those passing, milling, waiting. Drugs being smuggled. Terror being averted. Security being maintained. Threats being assuaged. Assuaged? Did I say that? The fuck is assuaged? Secret Service. FBI, CIA, NSA, PTA, XYZ, PTTPRO, ATT, NFL, ABC, Saudi, Argentine, Italian, Israeli. Wary eyes, cross looks, whispers, taps on shoulders. Look at that. I tried to match their pace, did match it, no choice. Keep my eyes ahead, not be embarrassed, afraid, angry, must not get angry. Terrorists are angry people. I'm American, jovial, happy, love to chat, eat burgers. We arrived at a gray door, not unlike 100 other unmarked gray doors leading to supplies of Pine Sol and Windex. We entered, now in single file, blackie, blonde, me, whitey. Down a white-tiled hall with gray block walls. Nothing on the walls. To another gray metal door with silver knob. We entered and stood in our group for a moment. Maybe they'd not worked together much, or had not used this room before, or they really didn't want to be here. There's a long gray metal table. Behind that, a gray metal folding chair. On this side of the small gray-painted concrete block room with gray-painted concrete floor were two gray metal folding chairs, and maybe that's what the deal was. They didn't know where to find another gray chair. A silver metal ashtray, clean, sat on the table. A smell of 1970s cigarettes hung in the air like moldy, mildewed laundry. Bell-bottoms. We all walked around a bit, shuffled sideways and back. Checked out the pattern of the blocks, head joints, bed joints, a lack of dirt in the corners, until Whitey spoke. Ron, have John sit over there, nodding toward the chair on the other side of the gray metal table. So I walked around to sit over there as Ron tried to catch me to direct me, and ending up coming around the other side and beating me to the chair. I sat. It was cold. Not close at all to the table or the wall, this particular chair. Not feeling I possessed sufficient cachet to move the chair, I sat where it was, out in the open. No man's land. No person's land. My hands on my knees, feeling my billfold. Wondering if I turned off the stove, wondering if it made any difference. Perhaps sensing a possible security breach, Ron sidled around the table and hustled to the door. He fiddled with a big silver knob, trying to see if it would lock. Just leave it, said Whitey. If you fuck it up, how are we going to get out? Ron put his back to the door, his hands behind his back. Whitey scraped up one of the chairs on their side, sat right up close, laying his elbows on the table like a full house. He pushed the ashtray toward me. John, he said. My name is Bill. Cosby, I said. He did not smile. This is Ron, Laura. He fired thumbs over each shoulder. Ron and Laura were not smiling. I put both hands up to say I didn't smoke. What do you have against the United States of America? Laura asked, because she just had to. Are you a terrorist? Are you an idiot? To answer that, we have to agree first on what terrorism is. Freedom fighter, terrorist. Depends who has the money to pay whom to sit in the news anchor chair, right? Do you belong to any terrorist group? Have you been to Iraq? I asked them what they thought of Osama's fancy new beard. They just sort of shook their heads. Hitting my stride, I explained to them that Philip Zelikov, the main author of the preposterous 9/11 Commission report, is a self-described expert in the creation and maintenance of public myths. Good man. I pointed out that Zelikow co-authored a 1998 Foreign Affairs article on the likely political and cultural effects of a massive Pearl Harbor-style terrorist event such as the destruction of the World Trade Center. In that article, Zelikow noted that such a mythic event would split time into a before and an after. The after, of course, was a whole new world of post-9/11 terror hysteria. That's why we're in this room right now, I said. We're living in Zelikow's after. Cozy, isn't it? Are you a member of a terrorist group? Asked Laura. I looked at her. For some stupid reason, I winked. I've never been able to wink. Maybe it was a twitch. Maybe she thought it was a twitch. Myself, I'm not for certain. But who were the Citizens for 9/11 Truth? Asked Ron. Well, I began. I looked at my hands as a guilty person might. I shook my head, counted my digits. If you know enough to ask that, then you already have your answer. I looked up. Right? Why do you wear that shirt? Asked Ron. I feel naked without it, I told him. Well, I said, because I know something most people don't. Maybe I want to talk about it. To cry for help, for understanding, for someone to pay some fucking attention to me. Maybe I'm bragging that I know what really happened, or maybe it's something else. Maybe I'm just dazed and confused. You ever had days like that? Kind of all pushed back against the chair, against the door, into the corner, getting comfortable, getting away, getting a better view of this fucking terrorist in their fucking midst. Well, what really happened then? Well, I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you, I said, making eye contact, looking for signs of connection, a commitment, an agreement to go on. Yeah, whatever, said Ron. Okay, then I'll take that as a big yes, I said. Bill flipped his chair around backwards to be able to lean on the backrest. Laura took the empty chair. Ron stayed by the door at attention. I put my hands on the table, folded them, and did the eye contact thing all around. Cui bono means Sonny and Cher in Italian, right? The whole thing was planned from the beginning. The New World Order, the project for a new American century. Global power for America, that just about says it. Do I need to go on? They stared hard. Tough room. Tough mofos, these three. Absurd conspiracy theory. 19 brown young men with box cutters. How did they get through? And their fearless leader is a man with a towel wrapped around his head like an old woman in Omaha just out of the tub on a Sunday night. Dangerous Muslim. Dangerous Indian. Dangerous Negroes. Criminals. Russians. Dragons. Big bees. Hey, they needed a new Pearl Harbor. George Bush Jr. was governor of Texas. His father had all the contacts, all the inside information. Compassionate conservatism. They just needed someone to put through with all the money in the world. Shut the fuck up, growled Ron from the door as Laura scooted to the edge of her chair. You don't know all that, said Bill. Do you? Asked Laura. How do you know that's true? Asked Ron. Jesus, God, so many excellent questions. I pushed back in my chair, stretched out my legs, said, well, nothing. I took the time to look each one of them in the eye. I read a lot on the internet, I said. I'd be better off watching TV, I know. Do you believe me? They looked at me. Laura and then Bill pulled out packs of cigarettes, matches. I pushed the ashtray toward them. Ron gritted his teeth. I could see his jawbone through his zero body fat face. He had sunglasses in his shirt pocket. Nice ones. Bill sucked hard on his smoke, tilted his head to exhale toward the ceiling. And so, I crossed my legs and folded my arms. Felt like an old professor with former students who had stopped by the office to chat. United Airlines, Flight 77, takes off from Dulles, headed to Los Angeles, early in the morning. 8:40, says Ron. He puts weight on one leg, Boeing 757. And Flight 11 from Boston, headed to L.A., and 175 from Boston to L.A., and Flight 93, Newark to San Francisco, says Laura. She scoots back into her hard metal chair, crosses her legs, pops, then uncrosses her legs and leans forward to knock the ash off into the tray. Kind of that one movie thing, Sharon Stone, I forget the name, never actually saw it. Meanwhile, our two pilots, let's call them Bert and Ernie, they're also heading into the same general airspace, joining the morning commute on a beautiful, almost fall day. Behind them, the plane is buzzing with activity, the hive fully engaged. President Bush is about to arrive at that elementary school in Florida. Well, anywho, we got all this activity going on. Well, Mom and Pop American are heading off to school with the kids. Hurrying to work. We got four fucking war games taking place involving attacks by planes, disasters, what have you. We got air traffic controllers asking each other what kind of a day it's going to be with all this shit on their screens, okay? The four planes we're talking about, they're filled to less than 50% capacity. When's the last time you took a trip across the country with that kind of room to spread out? And each one of our planes is the same thing. Well, they wanted to kill some folks, but only some. Not everybody. These guys and gals were in charge of planning our day that day. Some's less than many, right? Or is it fewer? Flight 11 from Boston to Logan with Captain John Organowski in charge, along with co-pilot Thomas McGinnis, as well as the now famous Betty Ong. Flight attendant heads off for Los Angeles, takes off west and veers north into upstate New York, turns sharp left, passes over Albany, then collides with the North Tower. Flight 175 with Michael Horrocks and Victor Saracini in the front chairs also takes off for Boston, also intended for Los Angeles, goes off course in northern New Jersey, banks north, and crashes into the South Tower. Flight 77 embarks from Dulles in the nation's capital, also California Dreaming. Turns around to West Virginia and hits the Pentagon a bit later. You believe that? Meanwhile, we got Flight 93 from Newark on its way to San Francisco with Jason Dahl, 53, from Denver, the captain. Leroy Homer, 36, of Marlton, New Jersey, its first officer, along with future dead rock stars, Todd Beamer, Mark Bingham, Thomas Barrett, and Jeremy Glick on board as passenger. Turns around just west of Cleveland and crashes southeast of Pittsburgh, and there we have it. Each plane was taken over by young Arab men, and the Bush government has every right to bomb Afghanistan and invade Iraq. You don't believe that, do you? Asked Bill. Do you? I said. They sat in silence. I daydream, which I don't like to do any more than nightdream. I almost don't like to sleep. When I was young, I could escape from the world by sleeping until noon if I didn't have a class. Now there's no place to go. There's no place to go. And that wraps up another episode of The New American Dream. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week. And thank you, Mike, and good night.
Thank you, Chuck, for all you do, all you did to make the interviews happen. technical stuff, all that stuff. And thanks to our guests, Anthony Rayson, M.K. Davis, Philip Ferruggio, and Frank Cordero.
Oh, I wish I had someone to love me, someone to call me their own. I wish I had someone to live with. I'm tired of living alone. So meet me tonight, love, oh meet me. Meet me out in the moonlight alone. For I have a sad story to tell you. Must be told in the moonlight alone. If I had the wings of an angel, over these prison walls I would fly. I would fly to the arms of my darling, and there I'd be willing to die. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Revolution, Revolution Radio.
You don't see it, do you? How close we are to absolute chaos. The sick ones are sitting on their fat asses, eating and drinking themselves into a stupor, polluting the world without a second thought while it goes down the toilet. Nobody wants to do the nasty work. You know, the shit that we all just think about. Most good citizens are just along for the ride and then bitch and moan and complain about everything when it doesn't work out. Not me. Get it done.
Revolution Radio. Where we do the nasty work. www.freedomslips.com.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of